We are looking forward to our next guest. It has been a popular request when we have asked people who they'd like to hear from, and that is Super Duper Bruce Duperuzel. In terms of guests, we've done a couple of things by fluke in the last couple of weeks. We happened to get Stephen Ziller last week by chance when St Kilda was playing Richmond in South Australia. He's a South Australian and played for St Kilda and Richmond, and discovered that last week was 50 years to the day that our next guest played his first game for the Saints, was part of a big successful influx of Western Australian talent that St Kilda had through the 60s and 70s, and when you count Nicky Winmar through to the 80s as well. But you look at Brian Sirikowski, John McIntosh, the Sidebottom brothers, of course George Young, Russell Reynolds, and Bruce Duperuzel, who is our guest on the podcast this week. And Bruce, nice to have you with us. 139 games with the Saints before a brief stint with Footscray, but nice to have you on. And obviously, there were a lot of your fellow Western Australians. We'll talk about your other career in sport in WA with cricket a little bit later on, but George Young a little bit before you and some of those others. What got you to the Saints? Was it a little bit of that factor, the connection that the club seemed to have with the West?
Sort of what happened, I think, in the early 70s, there was a bit of a connection between Claremont and St Kilda. And I think I was probably very fortunate. I came direct from school. I was at boarding school for a few years in Perth, and I wanted to play with Claremont, who they recruited me. I was a York boy, which is a farming community about 100 miles east of Perth. And Dennis Marshall was my first coach, and I think I was very lucky having him, because he was a Claremont boy who had gone to Geelong and was a very pretty impressive footballer at Geelong as sort of a halfback flanker, ruck rover. And they brought him back to Claremont in 1969 when I joined Claremont, and he was my first coach. And he really brought back, I guess, a VFL feel to a club that was probably going through a little bit of a tough time. And funnily enough, not much has changed in 50 years, because by the end of that first year, I played in a last few games, and there were 15 first-year players in the team. So he cleaned it out, as they say, and got together a group sort of to come through. And 3 years later, I think in 72, we played off in the grand final. So in some ways, not much has changed in all those years when you think about it, that you get the right group of players together and keep them together, which is a lot more difficult these days with the way the game's played. But so I started with Dennis, and then we had a pre-season game with St Kilda. We came over to Melbourne, and I happened to get a few kicks, so I had Ian Drake and Graham Huggins chasing me, and I ended up signing with them in early 1970, I think in May, and they were pretty happy because I made the state team in 1970, and WA came across to the MCG to play Victoria, and Graham Farmer was our coach, captain coach. And I happened to sneak around Mel Brown in those couple of hours, and I kicked six on the MCG, and I had a lot of clubs chasing me in the Monday. And Drakey and Hugo were pretty happy that the ink had dried and I was tired as St Kilda, which I was happy about, because I certainly wanted to pursue my career over here, even though there was really no money in the game, you know, in those days. And in fact, just probably one point too was, I noticed too that Russell Reynolds and George Young, it was 51 years this week, in the first week of April when the season started. It was 51 years that they had come across and played their first game at St Kilda, because they came the year before I did, yes.
Incredible timing to get you on this week. But I wanted to ask you, was it always a goal of yours to come to play footy in Melbourne? Because obviously you're growing up in WA. The WA NFL, as it was at that stage, was a pretty strong competition. A lot of good players over there. And you mentioned you'd played state footy already. I think the week after you kicked six on the G, I think you you shattered your leg or your ankle pretty badly.
Yes,
from what I was reading earlier. But was that always a goal to come to Melbourne and play footy?
It was extreme high and low in a week, because we played on the MCG on the Saturday. Should have won the game, in fact. Only two reasons stopped us. I think Gary Dempsey took about 30 marks in the goal square, and the winning goal was kicked by Wayne Richardson, a West Australian who never played in Perth, so he came to Collingwood direct as a pretty much a school end of his schooling. He came straight to, he never played senior footy in Perth. He kicked the winning goal, and then we went to Tasmania on the Tuesday to play Tasmania, and they brought the fog in. And they beat us on the oval in Hobart the following Tuesday. So we went home with no wins, and then I shattered my ankle. I dislocated it very badly, and I had probably 9-12 months off to get over that. So it was a real bummer after having played so well on the Saturday. And but it was always, because really, Melbourne was the centre of the universe in terms of football, certainly VFL in those days. And I guess if you wanted to put yourself to the test, then it was always the dream was. I remember as a kid on the farm, 12 o'clock on a Saturday, I'd play, turn on the ABC and listen to the game of the day that was broadcast and play my own game on the farm. And that was where it really all started, I guess, and went to Claremont, signed with St Kilda in 1970. But in those days, there was no drafting. It was really just when the club was prepared to let me go, and they said, well, we'll let you go after 5 years. I captained them for 2 or 3 years, and then I finished at the end of 73 and moved to Melbourne. Still remember it very vividly, 14th of February 1974. On a Sunday, and went down to the club. They'd played a scratch game and saw the boys. I'd known a few of them over the preceding years, and that's where it all started. And it's been terrific. A lot of disappointment in some ways, but you never quite know. When I signed, the club played in the grand final the next year, so I was pretty excited about having made the right choice, but. In the end, I never played a final, which still bugs me today.
So I was going to ask you the comparison between what the VFL was then and then what the Waffle was then. Obviously, these days there's a vast difference between the two competitions, with the VFL evolving to the AFL. But what's the main, I guess, differences between the league, and what drew you more to the VFL? You were saying, obviously, it's the centre of the universe, but was the playing conditions a lot better? Were the perks of playing in Melbourne a lot better for yourself? What's the real thing that drew you over mostly?
No, I think it was really just the competition, where you really wanted to put yourself to play in the best competition. Conditions were much better in Perth because we never played in mud. came to Melbourne and people said, why the hell are you going there? It's cold and wet and miserable. And the G in those days was a mud heap, nothing like and let alone playing indoors at Marvel. It was really just because there was really no money in football in those days. I think I started at Claremont for 20 a win and 5 a loss, and I think I came to St Kilda in those days on about $5,000 a year, which probably wasn't too bad because you'd do it for nothing. But so I came and having played straight cricket for some years before, there was no money in cricket either. I think we were getting $12 a day playing Shield in Perth. We'd fill the whacker up, and I was very fortunate in those couple of years I played and we won the Shield with people like Dennis Lilly, Rod Marsh, Graham McKenzie, Bob Massey. It was a pretty good team, but you understand very clearly when Kerry Packer came with his bag of money, the guys couldn't get there quick enough because there was a lot of money being made, but it wasn't going to players.
There were plenty of athletes in that era who kind of juggled a couple. I mean, obviously, Simon O'Donnell after you, Max Walker through the 70s, George Young obviously played a bit of cricket as well. But it's remarkable that obviously between playing a state game at the MCG and signing with St Kilda and coming to St Kilda, you played Shield cricket and won a Shield title. And I'm not surprised you won the title with the names you just mentioned. But was it a juggleable lifestyle, if that makes sense, or did it come a point where one had to win, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it's a good question, because in Perth, the seasons ran into each other, and I was playing with Claremont Cottesloe in the pennant cricket, and we got to the final, and I actually had to miss the first two rounds of football, even though I was captaining Claremont at the time. The coach wasn't that impressed with it, but it would have been the same the other end of the season if we'd got to the final of the football, and you wouldn't walk away from playing in the grand final to go back to cricket. So, and as it turned out, we beat our rivals were Midland Guildford, who had Norm O'Neill was part of the team, Keith Slater, some very well known names, and we had great delight in beating them for the pennant in that year at the Wacker. And Doggy Main, or Laurie Main, as people would remember him, he was our captain coach at Claremont. So we had great delight in winning the pennant that season. But it was very difficult to juggle, because the seasons did overlap each other at each end of the season. So when I came to Melbourne, I effectively walked away from cricket because you just couldn't really do the two properly. And I ended up playing with Youngie in the VJCA, I think, and we won a title with Bentley, I think, in about 1976. But it just wasn't the pressure, and it kept you fit without the pressure of going to pennant. So cricket really sort of fell away, and probably just an example. My brother Gary, who my oldest brother, he became an umpire in the Packer series, and to give you an idea of the difference, because he got quite bad treatment from the other umpires when he made the move, probably like the players did, and he got a 3-year contract with Packer, which was hardly lucrative, but it was pretty good in those days. He would have had to umpire Shield for 52 years to get the same money. So if you spread that out amongst why the players went, it was very obvious that and I think we've all read the stories of Ian Chappell having meetings with Sir Donald Bradman and looking for some of the loot, because it was all, they couldn't get the bank, it was all in Fort Knox at the Australian Cricket Board, and Sir Donald wasn't going to open the door. So when Packer came, they were all very happy to make the move, and my brother was lucky. He had a fantastic 3 years umpiring probably the best players in the world in that series. And but then when he went back to when they all rejoined, it just never worked out. The old guard made it very difficult for him, which was disappointing, because he should have umpired tests for probably another 10 years after that, but it was just the scenario around it, and he just didn't need it, so he gave the game away, which was really disappointing. He stopped umpiring.
We're all pretty big cricket fans, so we could probably do a whole podcast on your cricket experience and some of the stories of your cricket life. But I guess back to footy. Now, the word is that the club had kind of seen you as the long-term replacement for Ross Smith, who was coming towards the end of his career. And I read a little story that Ross Smith actually came out of retirement when you got injured a little bit later on after he'd retired. But can you, I guess, walk us through what that was like, I guess, stepping into the shoes of someone like Ross Smith?
Well, I think I had the hairstyle that was probably part of the reason I got the number 3. Yes, it happened. It was 1975, and I think Ross was assistant coach to Jeansy, and I was playing at Victoria Park, the famous Victoria Park at Collingwood, and I snapped my Achilles, which was a really unusual injury in those days. I think we've had about three this year, haven't we, of players snapping Achilles. But that was in mid, I think probably June, May, June of 75. I snapped an Achilles. I'd got the ball in the middle of the ground and I'd seen a Collingwood player heading towards me. I waited to see what direction he's going. Then I went to take off and fell over, and that was it. And just in that particular position of taking off, it all obviously went to one spot, and it literally exploded off my ankle, and that was it. It was no pain. It was just incredible, you know. And so that took probably 12 months to get over, and that. So as a result of that, Smithy got his jumper back and he came back and played the rest of that year.
So 74 being first season at the club, you've come in, won the goal kicking, won the BNF. How did you feel stepping into that team that year and then all of a sudden having that such an impact at the team and been able to provide so much? And we didn't have a great season, but it wasn't a terrible season like some of the ones later on in your career that where we've struggled to win a match at times. But yeah, how did you feel after the first season thinking I've done pretty well here?
Well, I was happy with my goal kicking, but I'd have to just I didn't win the best and fairest that year.
I think Glenn Elliott won the best and fairest that year.
Yeah. I would have liked to have, but I'd have to say that I didn't. I was runner-up to Jeff Dunn in 1980 or 81. That was about as close as I got. But, I just enjoyed being in the middle of the universe and just, you know, Alan Jeans was a phenomenal coach. I really enjoyed playing under him. And with guys like Breeny and Cowboy, Bob Murray, Glenn Elliott. We had some disappointing years. The one that got away, when I look back now, was 1978. We were on top of the ladder at one stage during the year, and then a lot of our really good fans would remember, I think it was the game against Essendon, down at Moorabbin, and there was a bit of stuff to do. I think Carl Dittrich, I think, ran through a guy called Terry Cahill. And then on Monday, I think the headlines read, "The Saints are animals." Carl went up to Woori Yalik into his hut, I think, and they couldn't find him for quite a few days. And that was the end of, because we were close to leading the ladder, I think, midway through the year. We were in the top two or three. We had a big side, a good side, and I look back on that, and we just went missing for 3 or 4 weeks to get our, before we got our mojo back, and then we had to beat, I think, Carlton in the last game of the year at Moorabbin, and I think we beat them by about 10 goals, but we needed Fitzroy to beat Geelong at Geelong, and that's like, I think they paid him to go down there for a holiday because it was just a formality, and we missed the finals that year by 2 points. But we had the side. We had Gary Sidebottom, Carl, Rex Hunt, George Young, Loxie, I think Graham Jelly. We had a side that could have won a premiership. I've got no doubt about that if we'd had an opportunity, because we displayed it during the year, but it wasn't to be. And then the next year, so at the end of 78, we lost Hunty, retired. George Young went back to Perth. Gary Loss, I think, went back to Ballarat. And if you looked at their figures, I think we lost something like combined 160 goals between them for the year. And really that, we imploded effectively, really, as a side. It was very disappointing, because that to me was the one where we could have really had something to say about the premiership that year, because we had a very big. And look, when you play with Carl Dittrich, you had 18 blokes in the opposition looking for him, They were never quite sure where he was, and they always liked to know where he was, as long as he wasn't anywhere near them. And, you know, it's a good distraction.
To put that in perspective, so, yeah, Hawthorn, North Melbourne and Carlton finished 1, 2 and 3 that year. And the back end of the year, St Kilda beat North at Arden Street, beat Hawthorn by 56 points at Waverley and beat Carlton by 50 at Moorabbin. So they were well and truly flying come the back end of that year. For those, obviously, we've discussed your statistics a little bit, but I guess in your own words, how would you describe yourself as a player? I mean, looking at your numbers, you're getting between 20 and 25 and having about 6 shots a goal a game, which is, you know, quite remarkable statistics. But if you were to describe yourself or even make a modern comparison, there aren't too many players like that, I must say, these days.
It's pretty hard. I can't remember. God, it's 50 years ago. I just enjoyed the game. I guess I was probably lucky in that I came from a very sporting family. You know, footy and cricket was our whole life. It was footy in the winter and cricket in the summer, and so we probably had the ball skills, and I just enjoyed playing the game and you know, just being part of a team. And I guess, as I said earlier, the one thing that just really still irritates me today is that I came to Melbourne to play finals, and the year before I came, St Kilda played off in 73, I think. In fact, George Young, I think, might have kicked 6 on the out at Waverley. He always reminds me every time I talk to him. And then they never played a final while I was there. And then I went to, and I guess that was disappointing too. I didn't want to leave the club. But at 33, I think the powers that be decided that I was probably over the hill. So I took my footy and went to the Dogs for a couple of years, which I really enjoyed. I think I played just under, I don't know, 26 or 7 games there. A year under Bluey Hampshire, and then Mickey Malthouse took over in 84, which I really enjoyed. I played with Mick. That was much more enjoyable than playing against him, because he was a bugger to play against when he was at Richmond. He was a tough nut, but he used me off the bench basically, and Dougie Hawkins named me Granddad. They used to call the crowd, call "Bring on Granddad," and so I sort of came on and off the ground, and probably that was a disappointment, because at the end of 84, I'd played a few reserve games, and you get to that point where you're going, well, do I go on or do I get out if there's still a little bit left in the tank? They were keen for me to go on in 85. And in the end, I decided I'd finish up and went on to the match committee in 85. And if you look at the figures there, you'd see that we were 10 points away from probably playing off in a grand final when I was in the match committee, not out on the ground. So at each end of my career in Melbourne, it still bugs me today, because you came to Melbourne to play finals. You know, that's really what it's that simple. Just like I think most players today, they want to go to sides that's going to take them to the finals, and we all search, you know, search for that. And some players have come from Perth and gone into a side that haven't done well, and then they've ended up playing, you know, half a dozen finals. And I remember talking to Alan Jeans before he passed away, and I said to him, "Jeansy, when I come back next time, I want to come back as Russell Green." Because Greeny and I started the same day on April the 6th, 1974. And as we know, he suddenly found himself at Hawthorn, and he ended up playing something like nearly 30 finals and probably 2 or 3 premierships in that time. I stayed at St Kilda and then went to the Dogs and never played a final. So I said to Yab, "I want to come back with Russell Green, because you can't be that lucky." That's just the way the ball bounces, isn't it?
That's footy, yeah. Isn't it? I want to ask you about, I guess, that period leading up to your departure from St Kilda in early 83, because I think you'd only just a couple of years earlier been appointed, firstly, vice-captain, I think, in 1980, and then midway through 81, took over the captaincy in your own right, and then had it in full for 82. And then, I guess, almost suddenly, yeah, at the end of 82, early 83, seemed like you were just kind of given your marching orders. Was it by Ian Stewart? I mean, what was that period like for you?
Yeah, it was disappointing. I think probably Alex Jesolenko was my saviour. I wasn't probably the top of the pops with Mike Patterson. And then when Mike got the chop and Jezza took over, he was playing, but then he became coach. I'm not sure why it was, but we just seemed to have very similar values, and I enjoyed his coaching, and he sort of pulled me out of left field to make me vice captain. I had a pretty good year, I think, in might have been 81 when I was runner up to Jeff Dunn as, and I think I made the All Australian side in, I think it was 81 in the carnival, and finished up runner up to Dunny. And then Jezeb made me vice captain, and then a captain in 82, I think, when he retired. And I think too, I think Stewie, when we've had a chat, Stewie and I have had a chat about it over the time, but I think basically Stewie was looking to get some youth into the team, and obviously, and I think too, they were concerned perhaps even then that I'd had a couple of concussions, and even then it was raising its head. And they were concerned about my health, so as to speak. But as it turned out, they really didn't want me around, so I chose to go. And then, unhappily, they wanted money for me, which I thought was rather hilarious when they were keen to get me out the door. But anyway, Shane O'Sullivan was the first one to reach out to me as general manager of the Dogs, and I had quite a strong interest from Essendon. It's the old story of sliding doors. I think Noel Judson it was, and Cheeds were quite keen to get me there, but I just felt Shane had shown a lot of interest early and wanted me there. And if I'd gone to Essendon, I could have been part of an 83-84 premiership. But I retired too early and missed the 85 final, so wasn't to be.
So, yeah, it was 1980 was your All-Australian selection. I was going to ask you about that. Obviously, we see the big fanfare these days of it all, and like a big night, and they all get presented with jackets and everything. What was the, I guess, the any sort of presentation in 1980? Was it did they actually give recognition to it? Did you get a nice green jacket like they do or anything like that?
No, it's not quite like it is today. I think the side was announced, and it was probably in about 4 inches of a column in the papers announcing the Australian, All-Australian team. And we got a plaque noting that I was a member of the All-Australian team, and we got a jumper with the All-Australian green and gold jumper, which I was only looking at. So we're just doing a bit of cleanup at the moment, and I came across that, and I probably should put it into a frame, but I might let my son do that.
There's a fair team that you got named in as well. And you look, there's selections from obviously different states within there. But Tommy Hafey coaching, you got named Graham Corns, Robbie Flower, Ken Hunter from West Australia with yourself. So it's a fair team to be named amongst. So there's seemed, I'd say, quite a bit of pride to be put alongside those names within the league that you played in.
Well, no, it's certainly probably one of my most strongest memories of making an All-Australian side isn't any, what are you looking at, the top 20 odd or 22 players in the carnival at that particular time. I think it was in Adelaide where it was played at that year, and to be able to make the All-Australian side was pretty special. And I think it's interesting because Youngie and I, we've sort of got a little bit of a We go back to playing schoolboys cricket in for WA, I think, when we were 12 and 13, back in the early 60s. And then we played Shield together. And Youngie, of course, in his first Shield game, made 100, which he'd like me to always just put that out for people to realise that he made 100 in his first time playing for WA. And but that's the, you know, he was a very unique player. He was the one we really missed at St Kilda because he was just a talent, left footer, could do most things, and he showed it on the cricket field as well. When he made 100, he made it look very easy. And but he and I are sort of one of the few that came out of Western Australia that played in the Shield finals of cricket, played VFL footy, and both All Australian. I think he was All Australian probably a couple of years, a year or so before me. So I speak to him probably once a week, you know, or we might be texting each other. I nearly had to go to the psychiatrist after Sunday's game. It was weird. And I think Ross probably described it best by saying the aliens came in at half time and replaced me, because I texted Youngie and I'm saying, this, you know, it was probably the first 2 minutes of the game. I'm going, this looks bad. And then he came back a few minutes later and said, no, unbelievable. But somehow they got out of jail, which was a real credit to them. And what I like about it is, which we've been crying out for a little while, is the speed, getting some speed. And, you know, we saw that in probably the first week, certainly against Collingwood, that speed that you just got to have these days. If you don't have, you just don't go anywhere. And then losing Henry, you know, he certainly made a difference, and it was shocking to have him out for 6 or 8 weeks. But hopefully he's going to be good for the second half of the year, you know. But I just like the mix of the young kids they've got coming through and the speed. And I guess the one concern I have is I just hope Rowan Marshall stands up all year, because he's been such a great player over the last 2 or 3 years. We couldn't afford him to go down, you know. He's a key to it.
Well, it's great to hear that you're still, I guess, following the club and involved at that level, even as a supporter. But I just wanted to, I guess, we asked Stephen Ziller this last week around opinions on State of Origin footy. I mean, you played for WA before it was even called State of Origin. It was just rep footy. How do you feel about, I mean, firstly, what did playing for WA mean to you? And secondly, I guess, how do you feel about State of Origin now? I mean, would you like to see it come back? Do you understand why they don't do it anymore? Like, how do you feel about State of Origin and rep footy in general?
Oh, look, I really enjoyed playing the carnivals, and certainly that first year, 1970, having Graeme Farmer as captain coach, and coming to Melbourne. As I said, the MCG wasn't a really good surface in those days. It was it was probably mud. It was soil, but it was very heavy. And you look at the conditions they play in now, it's just phenomenal. In fact, if you ask them, have you played in mud? They just don't play in mud anymore, because the technologies of the surfaces now are so different with the draining of the water that they just and the amount of sand that's used, that it just is never mud around anymore. So it just helps the whole game. But I think the playing in the State of Origin, I think it's just so hard now, because, and someone was talking about it today, I think, or yesterday, of why they can't. If, for example, they had State of Origin and someone like Connor Rosie, you know, did his ACL, for example, playing for South Australia against Victoria, how do you recompense that? How do you come to grips with it? And I'm just not sure. The game's so different, and it's so professional that it just doesn't lend itself, I don't think, to playing those games where you take the players away from their club. I look at the rugby and I watch the first 5 minutes because I can't believe that it's just vicious. New South Wales and Queensland, it's
amazing.
I don't watch the I only watch the first five minutes because you can't believe guys can run at each other like they do. But I think the game and the health of players now is so important that I just don't think the state of origin fits in there when it's never really continued on. It sort of got dropped and it's never really, whereas the rugby kept it going.
Yeah, now that it's gone, it's hard to see that it would ever come back. The final one from me, obviously there's lots of ways you can be recognised, but Russell Holmesby, who's about as devout a historian as there could be for any football club, published his Heroes with Halos in the mid-90s, had Ian Stewart as the greatest saint of all time with the likes of Doc and Plugger and those sorts of guys up there. You were in that list of his top 100 saints of all time. Something like that, I guess, just reflecting on your career and knowing, look, I made a decision to move my life from one side of Australia to the other, and to get that recognition from club and historically that you were an incredibly successful player. How does that feel, or I guess, or sit with you?
Yeah, no, look, I look back on it with a great deal of pride, and there's a lot of guys that never made the trip across the Nullarbor in those days. We all know guys that were great amateurs, but they never took the next step up into that, semi-professional. It takes a bit of courage, and I just enjoyed, I guess, Perth in those days was quite a small town, whereas today now it's a bit of a metropolis. Just coming to Melbourne, where it really was, that's where Australian rules footy was all about. Playing at the best competition, and I look back with a fair degree of pride, having captained St Kilda, and as I said, the one bugbear is that I never played finals, because that's really why every player would come to Melbourne in those days, was to be a part of a premiership team, just like it is today. Players move trying to find the magic formula to find a club that's going to play in a final, and more importantly, be the winner on that one day in September.
Now, you've clearly told us that, yeah, you're still getting into the game and what's following the club very closely with the, going through what we all went through on the weekend and the highs and lows of it all. Do you still get yourself to the games, and or do you sort of more still a bit of a, I guess, a follower on the TV sort of thing, or... I guess a lot of the players we've had on previously, they still go to the past players' functions and things like that. Just still get quite involved in all that.
Mm. I still go to the past players' functions. I probably try and get to half a dozen games a year. I've been a member of the True Believers, which is one of the coterie groups, which came out of the property industry, which I was working in over the years gone by. And I really enjoyed being part of that, but I haven't really been for the last couple of years or this year. So I'd go along to the games with them. But I had a little medical issue. I had a seizure back in October, so I'm actually not able to drive at the moment, which wasn't on the drawing board as far as I was concerned. And so it sort of has curtailed me, because I'm living in Mornington, so it's a bit difficult to get anywhere, because we're not on the, you've got to get to Frankston to get onto the train line. And I'm sort of relying on my wife to do the driving at the moment. So in that way, it's quite frustrating that I can't get around, but I'm hopeful of being back. I'm supposed to be not driving for 12 months, which takes me up to October this year. So unless I can get my doctor and Vic Rhodes to relent, I probably won't be back on the road before then. So it certainly wasn't something I expected, and it sort of was sort of came out of left field, really, because I keep pretty good health. I'm walking 6 or 7 Ks a day, which I feel quite privileged because I look at a lot of my mates who played footy and they're all having hip replacements, knee replacements. A lot of them can't walk that far, you know. So I'm quite happy with the fact that I'm still pretty active and being able to get out and walk most days and keep myself in reasonable shape.
Well, that is a blessing given the injuries that you had across the course of the career. But we appreciate you jumping on. It's been fantastic reminiscing over that time. You've been a popular request amongst our listenership. So we wish you well. Thank you very much for your contribution to the Saints and for your time with us tonight.
No, I appreciate it. And thanks for thinking of me and remembering back 50 years, because a lot of times it doesn't happen. So thanks for the time. We look forward to seeing what happens for the rest of the year, and hopefully it's an improvement on last year, because I don't think any of us could have had any problems with last year. I thought we did remarkably well the year we had under Ross for the first year, and hopefully the kids will continue to grow and they get a bit of a smell, and more importantly, they stay together, because that's we all know you've got to stay together for the next 4 or 5 years to really, I think, have an impact. So let's hope that happens, and appreciate it. Thanks, guys.